Today's programming is underwritten in part by Baroque Artists for Champaign-Urbana, presenting Handel's Sell, featuring guest artist Stephen Rickards on Saturday, March 19th at 7:30 p.m. in the Recital Hall of Smith Music Building on campus. More information is available at 378-6802. Today's broadcast is made possible with support from Orange Taxi, a new taxi company providing services to the U of I campus and the Champaign-Urbana area 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at 367-8888.
Good morning and welcome to Focus 580. This is our morning talk program. My name is David Inge. Glad to have you with us this morning. In the first hour of the show today, we'll be talking with a man who is well known as a Muslim scholar and a spokesperson for Muslims in the United States. His name is Muzammil Siddiqui. He was born in India, was educated in Saudi Arabia, in Britain, and in the United States. He is a graduate of the Islamic University of Medina in Saudi Arabia. He received a master's degree in theology from Birmingham University in England and earned his PhD in comparative religion from Harvard University, and over the years has worked with a number of Islamic organizations both in Europe and in the United States. At the moment, he is the religious director of the Islamic Society of Orange County in California, where he's been serving since 1981. He also, between 1996 and 2000, served as president of the Islamic Society of North America. He's also served as chairman of the Religious Affairs Committee of the Muslim Students Association in the U.S. and Canada, and as chairman of the Department of Religious Affairs at the Muslim World League office at the United Nations, at between 1976 and 1980. And continues to travel widely to lecture at universities around the United States and around the world. And he's often quoted in stories having to do with the issue of Islam in America. Questions as we talk this morning with Dr. Siddiqui are certainly welcome. All people need to do is dial up the number here in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. We do also have a toll-free line that's good anywhere that you can hear us. That is 800-222-9455. So at any point here, you can call. The only thing we ask of callers is that people just try to be brief, and we ask that so that we can keep the program moving and get in as many different people as possible. But, of course, anyone who is listening is invited to call. Dr. Siddiqui, hello.
Good morning, David.
Thank you very much for talking with us.
Thank you for inviting me.
One of the things that I know that I read, now this might have gone back several years, though was that at the time that Islam was the fastest growing religion in America, and I don't know if that is still true, but I do. I am interested if you have a number. Do you know how many Muslims there are in the United States?
Well, I don't know about the fastest growing religion, but it is certainly there is some growth. Approximate number of Muslims in United States, about 6 million. Mm-hmm.
One of the things that I wanted to talk to you about is your feeling at this point about how non-Muslim Americans feel about their fellow Americans who are. After the terrorist attacks of 2001, I think there was a great concern there would be acts of violence against American Muslims, that there would simply be a general sort of negative opinion, and that people from President Bush on down felt that it was important that a message of unity and tolerance be put out there. And he certainly did that, and other people have.
Well, I want to express my deep thanks. I have done that many times for American people in general, because most of them have shown great understanding of that this is an act that was committed by a very small group of people, a terrible act, a crime that was committed. And most people have this understanding, but there were some who, because of the lack of knowledge, not knowing about Islam and Muslims, and you know that in this country, a very large number of people, they really don't know much about Islam and Muslims. And so there were some incidents here and there, and they increased over the years because of a continuous our war against terrorism and media attention. And it creates anger in the minds of many people, unfortunately. So there are incidents. And the Council on American-Islamic Relations has been keeping account of that. They have shown this, that over the years, number has increased. The hate violence is on the increase in America.
Well, one thing that I was I wanted to ask you for your thoughts about, and this was perhaps some indication about where public feeling runs. This was a study that was done at Cornell, and the results were just made public just last December, so it's quite recent. Yeah. It was a study, they were interested in sampling people's views about and fears about terrorism. And according to this study that was done, again, I say by the folks at Cornell, almost half of the respondents polled nationally said that they believed that the American government should in some way curtail the civil liberties for Muslim Americans. And we had something like 27% say that all Muslim Americans should be required to register their location with the federal government. 26% said they thought mosques should be monitored by law enforcement. 29% agreed that undercover law enforcement agents should infiltrate Muslim civic and volunteer organizations in order to keep tabs on their activities and their fundraising. So on the other side, you can say, well, 48% of the people responded said they didn't believe that this should happen. But here we have a significant number of Americans who still seem to be fearful and suspicious of their fellow Americans who are Muslim.
It is a very alarming report. I am aware of it, and it is certainly Muslim community is very much concerned about it. We have to increase, and we have been working on that. We have to increase our work with the people and informing our neighbors and every level, who we are, what we are doing. And many mosques have opened to their neighbors, having open houses and various occasions, inviting people. And this is the way how it has to be done, because it is true that there is a war against terrorism that is going on, and it is necessary that terrorists must be stopped, because what they have done and what they are doing is creating a whole environment of insecurity. So I'm fully supporting, and Muslim community in America is supporting all this effort to stop this menace, this terrible thing. But at the same time, people have to know that Islam is the religion of peace. Islam is Muslim people, overwhelming majority. I would say 99.9% Muslims of America, especially, are law-abiding people. They're peace-loving people. And you have some wrongdoers, evil people, in every community, in every culture, in every religion. And we are concerned about that. And we are supporting our law enforcement agencies. We are with them. We have meetings quite regularly with people from the Homeland Security, with the FBI, with others. And we emphasize this point that the Muslim community, our mosques, our Islamic centers, we are in support of the work for peace and harmony for everyone.
Mm-hmm. Certainly it is true that that many Muslims, Muslim leaders, and others across the country have said the very thing now for over a period of years now, have said the very things that you have said, have tried to make the point that they feel that Islam is a religion of peace, and that the vast majority of the Muslims in the world would not do violence to anyone, and that American Muslims certainly are concerned about the problem of terrorism. Indeed, that message has been put out there, I think, by the American Muslim community. At the same time, it seems that somehow that there are many Americans who feel that Muslims have not been vocal enough, and that it may be that almost nothing that you could do would be enough for some people. And I wonder whether you think that somehow that's a little unfair, that you feel that that the Muslim community in America has been, has certainly made those statements, has said all those things, and that it's unfair for someone to come along and say, well, you know, you Muslims, you just need to speak out more. You need to be more vocal in your condemnation of terrorism. You need to somehow do more than you have done.
One of our Muslim leaders said that people have selective hearing. They only hear what they want to hear. People hear the news about incidents of violence, but they do not hear when people condemn and when people say things. They don't pay much attention to that. Every time anything happens, the Muslim community has spoken very strongly against that. And immediately after 9/11, within a few hours, a unanimous statement come out from 12 major Islamic organizations. I was in Washington at that time myself, and within a few days I was there with the president at the National Cathedral, and we had a prayer. And so it was, Muslim community has been there always speaking for peace, for harmony, and against violence, against terrorism. I don't know. I mean, we should certainly have to remove this impression from the minds of the people. But we need your help. We need the help of the media. Whenever media people come, I mean, we appreciate that. Very often, we are not approached unless there is some problem. Mm-hmm. But we would like to have in this kind of situation, like you are doing, that inviting Muslim leaders, Muslim speakers to speak on these issues. So we'd like to have more and more media exposure. I wish there are more opportunities like that.
Well, I have the impression, and you can tell me whether this is mistaken, that though there has been some, within the American Muslim community, there has been some tension between, well, maybe not tension is the wrong kind of word, a discussion between people on the one hand who feel that they should be more publicly engaged, and other people who say, for our security, maybe it'd be better if we just keep our heads down and not try to stand out.
I don't think it is going to be helpful, not speaking, because that will create more misunderstanding. When there is misunderstanding, people have to stand up and say this is wrong. And we have to write letters to the newspapers. We have to speak. Wherever there is an opportunity to speak, we should say it. Yes, some people think that isolation may help, but isolation I don't think is going to help.
One thing that I'm curious about, then, that is the extent to which Muslim Americans have been very directly involved in an American politics. There, as far as I know, and I could be wrong, are there any Muslims in Congress?
I don't think so. There is any Muslim in the Congress. But Muslims are participating and working, and we feel that we are part of the society, and it's our duty to participate.
So there would be nothing to prevent one, if they wanted to, from running for office.
No, this will be a very good thing, because there's 6 million people. There is representation is required, and it is good for everyone. I don't think Muslim, if they are in the Congress or in any position, I mean, when they will be there, they will be for the whole country. They will be for all people. They will not be only for Muslims. We are citizens. We love this country, and we have our duty to do everything to make this society a better society and this country a better country.
Let me introduce again our guest for this hour, in case we have somebody who has just tuned in. We're speaking with Dr. Muzamil Siddiqui. He is well known as a Muslim scholar and has often quoted and called on to make comments representing the Muslim community in the United States. Obviously, no one individual can do that, but he is one of the frequent voices that is heard. He is well known as a representative of the Muslim community in North America. He served for a period of years as the president of the Islamic Society of North America. That was between 1996 and 2000, and currently he works as the religious director of the Islamic Society of Orange County in California, where he's been serving since 1981. Questions are certainly welcome. Questions, comments. People want to join in the conversation. 333-9455. Toll free 800-222-9455. Just to go back to a comment you made a little bit earlier about the fact that mosques and Islamic centers around the country have made the effort to open the doors literally and invite in their neighbors. And I wonder to what extent you think that part of the problem perhaps simply is that there are a lot of Americans who maybe don't know any Muslims, who really don't know what their religion is all about. And this is, it's simply a matter of lack of information. And when you don't know somebody, you, I don't know how it is you form your impression of what they're like, but that it does have something to do with the lack of contact between Muslim Americans and Americans of other faiths?
That in this society, it is said that when you work, keep the religion and politics out, don't, so very people working with other places, they don't speak about who they are. So Muslims don't speak, when they are out in public, they don't speak about their religion. They don't say that they are Muslims. And of course, it is not written on any on the face of a person whether what religion he has, he or she have. So it is this reason maybe. And the other thing is, religion is a private thing. A lot of people keep it to themselves. But it is important that people should introduce who they are. Now it is in the media. Every day people hear the word Islam and Muslims. So it is required that people should invite their neighbors, invite their co-workers, and tell them it's not proselytizing, it is not trying to convert them, it is simply informing them, it is simply telling them who we are so that they know. LA Times reported a few years ago that 64% of people in America are not aware of Islam. Some Muslim journalist took a camera and stood in a busy street in Los Angeles asking people what they know about Islam. He got very strange answers. Some people thought it was the name of a person, some people thought it was the name of a country. And very, very strange answers that people gave. Very, very interesting kind of video is this. So that's necessary. Many people, even at the universities and colleges, when I go there and ask people, do you know the difference between Islam and Muslim? Many people don't have that answer. They don't know what is the difference between Islam and Muslims. When I tell them Islam is the name of the religion and Muslim is the person who says Islam is the name of the religion, then people understand some difference. I tell them that Muslim, not everything that Muslims do is Islam. Sometimes Muslims also do things that are un-Islamic. Just like not everything that Christians do is Christianity. If a Christian does not love his neighbor, doesn't mean that that is Christianity. That means he's not doing what the Christianity teaches. Hmm. So in a similar way, if a Muslim is doing something which is against the teachings of Islam, well, that's not Islam. He's doing against Islam.
Well, let's talk with some people. We have a couple of callers here and getting some others. The first is here in Urbana, where we are. It's line number one. Hello.
Hello, Dr. Al-Siddiqui. I wanted to share a concern that I had. I read a book some time ago titled Real Bad Arabs. That's R-E-E-L. And the author talked about films from the time of silent films up until the present. And, well, to put it mildly, Arabs and Muslims, I know that they're not synonymous, are not always, but generally reviled, really. And well, the concern that I have in general is that popular culture, movies, television, do a great deal to shape people's perception of Muslims. Are you familiar with that book, or do you have any comments?
Well, not with this book, but there are a number of books of this nature around, and people exaggerate and misinform and misrepresent things. Muslim culture in general, I would say that is the culture of tolerance. It's a culture of peace. People of many religions and many ethnic background and of different colors, they have lived together. Islamic societies have been known throughout history for the last 1,400 years. Of course, exceptions are everywhere in every culture, but in general, Islamic societies have been known for their tolerance, for their peace. The most ancient Christian communities are living in the Muslim world. You have Coptic community, you have people of Maronite Church, you have Orthodox, and many others. And Jews, Christians, and Muslims have lived together most of the time in peace and harmony. But there are incidents of misunderstanding, there are incidents of violence, but one should not generalize that. when Jewish people were persecuted in the West, in the Christian countries, where did they find the refuge? They found the refuge in the Muslim world. When in the very in the 7th and 8th century, when Islam is spread in the Middle East, when various Christian sects were fighting among themselves, Nestorians and Jacobites and Orthodox, who brought peace among them and who brought them together? It was the Muslim community. Even the Holy Sepulchre in Jerusalem, various sects were fighting, and the Christian denomination, the Christian sects, they agreed. They said they will give the key of the church to a Muslim family because that will be safe then. And it was kept for centuries with the Muslims. They are the one who are keeping the most sacred church keys and helping various groups to go and worship there. So this is another aspect of history which is not, unfortunately, emphasized in by some people. But there are others. You have a British author, The Legacy of Islam, T.W. Arnold. Read his book also and see what he says about the history of Islam.
Okay.
And recently you have Karen Armstrong, if you read her work, what she says about Islam and the spread of Islam. Or John Esposito, his work, Islam, the Straight Path, or Unholy War, number of other works. So there are people, Christian scholars, Catholic scholars, and even Jewish scholars who have given a different side of this history.
Yes, Karen Armstrong's book, A Short History of Islam, is really outstanding.
Yes.
All right, well, thanks very much for the comment.
Thank you.
We have somebody else here, some others, so let's go next to an Indiana caller on our line number 4. Hello.
Hello. This question, in some sense, is not fair because you can't speak for all Muslims in the world, but certainly the things that Muslims do in the world are going to affect American opinion. And I'm educated, and the group I'm with are educated, and one thing we find reprehensible is the notion that if a woman's raped, then she can be killed, or if her brother does something, she can be gang raped. I wonder if you'd speak to that sort of thing that you're going to run into when you get into the masses here in the United States.
Well, this is totally, something that we condemn because it has nothing to do with Islam. It is from tribal culture. And there are uneducated people living in tribes. They did not get proper education. They're living in their tribalistic traditions. And this Islam does not allow that. If there is a sexual misconduct, it is not the job of the family to take the law in their own hand. Any situation, if there is any crime, any misconduct, it should be brought to the court, and the court is the one who has to take the action. And the gang rape and rape in retaliation, absolutely reprehensible. It has no place in Islam. Any Muslim you ask who has done any study of Islam will tell you this. Islam does not allow that. There is a difference between Islam and Muslims. Some Muslims do things which are totally un-Islamic.
Our guest in this hour of Focus 580 is Dr. Muzamil Siddiqui. He is a well-known Muslim scholar, speaker. He is former president of the Islamic Society of North America. He now serves as the religious director of the Islamic Society of Orange County in California, where he's been serving since 1981. He's worked with many Islamic organizations in Europe and the United States. As I mentioned at the beginning, he served as chairman of the Religious Affairs Committee of the Muslim Students Association in the U.S. and Canada, chairman of the Department of Religious Affairs at the Muslim World League office to the United Nations. He is talking with us this morning, and questions, comments certainly are welcome. The number here in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. We do also have a toll-free line, and that means anybody listening can call in. If it would be a long-distance call for you, use that number. That is 800-222-9455. We have someone listening this morning in Bloomington, Indiana. They're next. Line number 2. Hello.
Hi, I would like to challenge the idea that Islam is a tolerant religion. In Saudi Arabia, as well as Iran, no other religion is allowed. Only Islam is allowed. In parts of Nigeria and parts of Indonesia, Christians, all other religions are persecuted severely by Muslims, and certainly in the Sudan, good grief, there have been over 1 million Christians killed in Sudan, by Muslims. Anywhere that Muslims are in a large majority, other religions are not allowed, especially Christianity is not allowed. Christianity is not allowed at all in Saudi Arabia. And if a Muslim in Saudi Arabia converts to Christianity, the penalty is death. There are several cases of Christians in Iraq. I'm sorry, in Iran. Several cases of Christians in Iran being executed, especially Christian ministers. And Ayatollah Khomeini flatly stated in Iran that the goal of Islam was world conquest. We now have cases in Nigeria, in Indonesia, good grief. I see pictures of the burned-out churches where the Muslims have attacked Christian churches and burned them to the ground. And, of course, we have the case of the Sudan. Nobody questions that. Anyone who comes on the air and calls Islam a tolerant religion has got a lot to answer for.
Dr. Siddiqui, you want to respond?
Well, you have one-sided reports. I mean, if you have in Nigeria or in Sudan burned-out churches, you also have the burned-out mosques. This is a kind of tribal war in Darfur and in southern Sudan and other areas. There have been tribal war. There have been also in some parts of Africa wars between the Christians among themselves, as well as between Muslims among themselves. I mean, Darfur, majority of the people are Muslims there, and they have been fighting among themselves. So that's a tribal situation. It has not between Muslims and Christians. Yes, in some cases, yes, there was between Muslims and Christians. But its incentive is not religious, more of political, economic, and cultural, and tribalistic. As far as Saudi Arabia is concerned, I'm not supporting everything that goes on in Saudi Arabia. But at the same time, I must say that there are thousands of Christians that are living there and working there in Saudi Arabia. There are at least 40 or 50,000 Americans who are there and working in Saudi Arabia, and as well as there are military people are there. And it is not right to say that they are not allowed to practice their religion. They are practicing their religion. They have their services, the other thing that they have that. But Saudi Arabia is predominantly a Muslim country. As far as Iran is concerned, Iran has churches. Iran has a Jewish community there. And most ancient Jewish community, most ancient Christian community is there. After the revolution, Islamic revolution, there were clashes between people of different faith, between the Baha'is and the Shiites, between the people of religion, but on the whole, it was not Muslim-Christian. It was among the people who were the supporters of the Shah and the people who were against the Shah. So that was the situation. So Sudan situation is a tribal situation. In a similar way, Nigeria situation is that way. There are some, I mean, I'm not denying that, there are some people, some Muslims who are intolerant, as well as there are some Christians there who are intolerant. But one cannot generalize that and say that this is the case. All of this is happening in these places is because of Islam.
Well, let's just take Saudi Arabia for an example, because there are Americans there, as you say. Some of our military people are there. We negotiated on our American bases. We asked the Saudi Arabians if we couldn't erect chapels. They would not allow us. They do not. You say Americans can practice Christianity on their American bases in Saudi Arabia. They better do it. They better do it secretly. They certainly don't allow us to erect chapels. It is kind of funny. Our diplomats negotiated with the Saudi Arabians, and they did allow us to construct bars. The Americans can drink there, but they can't openly worship there.
Well, if that is wrong, I mean, if they They allow them to drink alcohol, but they do not worship. If they do something like that, it's wrong.
Well, I don't like...
It is not Islamic way, okay, anyway.
Well, I wouldn't think so either.
It shows that they, if they are doing that, that shows that they are not following Islam.
And I'll tell you something. Egyptians, where the Egyptian government, now the Egyptian government certainly is not a Muslim government, but they are certainly prosecuting Coptic Christians. The Muslims, it's usually Muslim police forces in various cities that persecute.
Well, I mean, I was invited this week. I could not go. I was invited for a dialogue meeting between the Baba Shenouda, who is the head of the Coptic Church.
Yeah.
He and Muslim and the head of the World Council of Churches, they were all getting together in this week to discuss things together. So there is a lot of dialogue that is also going on. Yes, there is some violence in some areas, but there are a lot of people are living, and there are more than 10 million Christians living in Egypt. You cannot say that Christianity doesn't exist in Egypt.
No.
Coptic Church is a very strong church.
And it's a persecuted church, too.
I don't think I can say that this is a persecuted church. There are some persecution in some areas, but it is not a persecuted church. It's a very flourishing church. It's a very strong church. I myself visited Egypt several times and saw beautiful churches and services are going on and people are freely moving in different places. Actually, I visited an exhibit of religious books, and there was a very large number of priests wearing their robes, and they were all over and visiting and buying books, and the Christian books were sold and Islamic books were sold. All this is a whole exhibit of religious books that was there. It's in a very big area. I was surprised that such a large number come to see the religious books. And here the Christians and Muslims were moving around and reading those books and looking at the various literature.
I need to jump in.
Some people are overemphasizing some clashes, some misunderstandings that are taking place. But please go and visit yourself. If you have a chance, go there. A lot of people are visiting those places and coming out with a different kind of impression.
We're moving into our last 15 minutes of this hour of Focus. I have some other callers I want to include. 333-9455 here for Champaign-Urbana. Toll free, 800-222-9455. The next is someone here in town where we are in Champaign. Line number one. Hello.
Good morning. I definitely agree with you that Islam is a religion of peace. However, I also want to bring up the fact that there are many Islamic organizations, including some that you're affiliated with, which aren't only about peace. I heard the affiliation that you cited with the Muslim World League, and if that's correct, I'm looking just at the Internet websites, and they talk about the ongoing investigation by U.S. government of links between the Muslim World League and various terrorist financing networks and non-governmental organizations, even in Europe with groups connected to the Muslim Brotherhood, the Islamic Society of Germany, and various other organizations that are connected to violence and preaching violence and intolerance. So it's not a matter of that this is inherent in Islam, but that there are certainly Islamic organizations, it seems, based on what I read in the Internet, based on what I hear, based on the investigations that it does.
Well, as far as Muslim World League is concerned, I am not aware of that they've been involved in anything which is violent or terrorist.
Okay.
There is an investigation going on, but the investigation doesn't mean that anything has been found.
Well, I've got...
If they have found anything, I would like to know myself because
okay.
I'm not aware of that.
Let me list a few things. It says U.S. Treasury Department raided the group's North Virginia office for documents. There was a Senate Finance Committee.
But did they find anything?
Well, I don't know. This is an ongoing Senate Finance Committee investigation connected to IRS records with the Muslim World League in January of 2004. I don't know the results. I mean, I'm just saying there are certainly links between it and the Islamic Society of Germany, which is clearly connected to the Muslim Brotherhood, and with also connected to Wahhabi activities, connected to other violence in Europe. Now, you know, Europe is not the United States, but what I'm talking about is the fact that there are organizations, and these organizations, some of which seem to espouse things which are different than what Islam as a religion espouses. They espouse hatred, violence.
Anyone does anything which is un-Islamic or do things against or create violence or create hate against people, it's wrong. It's
well,
not right. With any organization does that, it's wrong.
For instance,
When it come out and when it is proved, I will be the first one to condemn it.
For instance, I see.
I will dissociate myself completely if I found out that this is what they have been doing.
Mm-hmm.
But it has not been proved yet.
Well, I see links here with the World Assembly of Muslim Youth, which talks about publications that it has which teach intolerance and hatred. I mean, I don't, you know, I can't say firsthand, but I see it on the internet, and I see it in...
A lot of propaganda that is going on. There are some people are, there is a Freedom House in New York has published a report recently.
Uh-huh.
They visited 15 Islamic centers,
mm-hmm.
and they found some books in the libraries,
mm-hmm.
and they quoted out of this about 43 books, and found here and there a few quotations, and they are saying that all the Islamic centers in America are filled with hate.
Mm-hmm.
Now, out of 2,000 mosques in America, they go to 15 and collect few books from the library shelves,
mm-hmm.
and then they find a few quotes here and there, and then they generalize and they say all the Islamic centers in America are filled with hate.
Yeah, I agree that...
I mean, can you imagine that? I mean, it's like going to a few churches in America and find some anti-Islamic books and say American churches are filled with literature against Islam.
Yes, generalization and stereotypes are terrible, and even more to root out, to look at intolerance that is...
We have to work together on that. We all have to work on that.
Right.
And certainly, Islamic organizations such as the Islamic Society of North America, CARE, Council on American Islamic Relations, these organizations are committed for peace. They're organizations are committed for understanding among all people.
Well, I could certainly say that.
We would like to have full support and understanding with our friends, our brothers and sisters of different faith communities.
Yes, and the Islamic Center in our community certainly is involved in this interfaith support and connectedness. My concern, as I said, was with the World Muslim League, which you were affiliated with and which I read about on the internet. So thank you for your response.
All right. Well, thank you for the call. Let us continue. Our next caller in line is in Charleston, and this would be line number 3. Hello.
Yeah, I have a question for our guest speaker.
Yes.
It seems he's defining Islam and Muslims so ideal that we don't have any such society on earth. And that's disturbing. I'm born and raised in Nigeria,
mm-hmm.
where the same week that we saw thousands of people killed here, thousands of people were killed in the most peaceful part of town, that prior to the arrival of the Muslims, that there were no such big fighting in a city like Jos, a very peaceful place, where more than the number of people killed in the U.S. were killed there. He is defining a situation in Egypt where the Coptics and those non-Muslims had no rights until quite recently under the Islamic rule. He's talking about the intolerance that is created in Nigeria today, and he called those tribal, and he doesn't live there. I wonder where he got his own idea of tribe, Islam, and whatever you call the categories he's making. It sounds he's speaking so... idea that the kind of Islam he talks about doesn't actually exist, because the one we know is the one that believes in jihad as part of its own element of propagating its own faith. So when we see jihad on the ground in Sudan, he calls it tribal, when the people who are perpetuating that are all Arabs, they are not Africans, and they are perpetuating that against Africans. When what happened in the Nigeria are a quasi-Arabic group that the Fulanis that are now perpetuating Islam and insisting that the nation of Nigeria should live under the Islamic law, and he's talking of tribe, it really just, I don't know where he's getting his categories from.
Well, Dr. Siddiqui, you want to respond?
I'm not really, are you from Nigeria yourself?
Yes, I was born and raised in Nigeria.
Which part of Nigeria?
I'm from central Nigeria, where there is no Islam at all, Benue State in particular. You don't find that nonsense there.
Well, Nigeria has gone through, as you know yourself.
Remember, Nigeria's Muslim was expanded by jihad. Usman Danfodio's jihad spread throughout Nigeria. So how do you say that there was peaceful Islam in Nigeria? All we know in Nigeria is violence created by Islam.
Well, I mean, I don't agree with that, but you know that situation in Nigeria, northern Nigeria, and Biafra, the Christian area, there have been a struggle going on to separate and to declare independence, and that's why there was some violence that took place. In some other areas, I'm not familiar totally. I have never visited Nigeria. But whatever I have read, in some areas there have been conflict because of the European influence, and so somewhat the local population felt that the missionaries have gone and converted people, and that had created some tension in those areas. So it's true that sometimes it is religious violence, sometimes it is tribal violence. Tribal societies are tribalistic in many parts of Africa. Some of Africans themselves have said that. And especially in Sudan, that I'm more familiar with that, much of the violence is tribalistic. Sometimes it is between among the Christians themselves. Sometimes it is between among the Muslims themselves.
I'm interested in how you react to the kind of comments that the caller made, and I imagine other people would make it and that would listen to you talking about Islam and would say something like, as the caller did, that what you're describing is an ideal, but the when we look at the real world, it simply isn't like that.
Well, every situation, there is an ideal of Christianity, but do you see that there is ideal Christianity practiced anywhere? So there is a problem, yes. People, we do have ideals. Yes, there is an ideal Islam, and there are difficulties, economic difficulties, political difficulties, social problems, tribal problems that are there. So societies are struggling with that. You cannot say that everywhere people are following the beautiful ideals of Jesus. Where are the places where people are following the beautiful ideals of Jesus? Where is the very loving, peaceful society? It is not involved in materialism, not involved in selfishness, not involved in wars, and everybody is ready to turn the other cheek. Where is that?
Let's talk with someone else. We're going very short on time. Again, I hope the caller will forgive me. I want to try to include some others. Next in line would be a caller in Champaign. This is line two. Hello.
Hi, my question deals with the whole idea of tolerance. And one of the things that, or a number of things that upset Americans and certainly upset me, is the kinds of events that we see in the world which raise questions about the capacity of either both Muslims as people and Islam as a religion to tolerate criticism of itself. And I'm thinking, of course, about Salman Rushdie and the fatwa that was taken out against his life, of the recent murder of a Dutch filmmaker who produced a film that was considered to be sacrilege by many Muslims. I'd like your speaker to comment on the capacity of both Islam as a religion and Muslims as a people to live with criticism of Islam. Thank you.
I disagree with the fatwa that was given, because that fatwa had no place to tell the people to go and kill this person, because he has written a very obscene, a very vicious book against the sacred personalities. That book, if you read it yourself, you'll find that it is not an academic criticism of Islam. It is just a vicious thing. It's just abuse of the Prophet and Prophet's wife and Prophet's family. And that's what he has done. So it is something that make people angry, but still there's no justification to go and kill somebody because somebody has done something like that.
Well, the problem I'm having is
recently, very interesting news came out. I was reading in one of the Indian papers that, and they were quoting Sun newspaper of London, that Salman Rushdie was very angry because some journalist has written something against his wife. So he was very angry with that and was saying, "I'm going to blow your head," or something like that. He was threatening. Simply because he did not like to have some bad words about his wife, and people were saying in that paper, they're saying, but he can say things against the sacred personalities of Islam and expect that people should not be angry.
It's not a question of being angry.
He himself gets very angry when somebody says something against his wife.
But my problem is when a religious leader like the Ayatollah Khomeini, who is as Islamic as I presume it's possible to be. Issues
well,
of
I mean,
are you saying that fatwa was not appropriate in Islam?
Well, Ayatollah Khomeini is not considered as Pope of the Muslim world. He is one leader. He was one leader for a group of people from Iran. Not all Shiites consider him as their head. Yes, in Iran he was a head, but Iran is only about, I would say about, 20% of the Shiites of the world live in Iran. 80% don't live there.
I guess
the Shia people are about 10% of the Muslim population.
I guess the difficulty I'm having is if people are trying to figure out what Islam is really all about, the natural inclination
is to look at those institutions which are dominated by Islam. You come and visit the Islamic centers in America and talk to the people. And see how they're living, and visit them, and speak to them. And that's what you'll see, daily life of Muslim, when you go and visit to your Muslim neighbor.
Well, why should I assume what kind of life he or she lives. But why should I assume that the behavior of my Muslim neighbor is more Islamic than the behavior of a religious leader in Iran?
How do I
decide which is really authentic?
Every religious leader does not represent the whole religion. There are many religious leaders in Jewish tradition, in Christian tradition. Sometimes you disagree with them. Sometimes they say statements that are not right.
Thank you very much.
For us Muslims, the most important thing is Quran, the Word of God. And we judge everybody according to the standard of the Quran.
Let's continue. We have another caller here, Bloomington, Illinois, on our toll-free line, line 4. Hello.
Hi, I know it's getting near the end of the show, and I'll try to be brief. Just a quick comment and then a question. I think many people, I know I would encourage people, many other people who've called to, if you have a question about something, the Internet might be a great source, maybe not always. When I became very curious about Islam, I read the Quran. I mean, I'm a Christian, but I went to the actual source. And when I hear the examples many of the callers have made, there are many examples on the Christian side where acts by groups or individuals that may be extreme or statements by Christian religious leaders, which may be extreme, it's very difficult, and it gets kind of gray when you decide to judge an entire group of Christians. If I were to judge all fundamentalists as hatred towards certain groups of people, you know, gays or lesbians or so on, it gets very difficult. And so, I mean, I just became curious, and I read the Quran, and I found it very enlightening. My question is, what do you think, I think specifically in America, could be done by religious groups to sort of, I guess, create more of a dialogue, because I think most of what we hear is in the press and on the Internet seems to be more sensational, and I don't think, at least I'm not seeing enough, of very concrete efforts on both parts of Christians, Jewish, and Muslims in America to create a national dialogue so that people could understand each other better, and I think look through a lot of the more obvious statements that people make and sort of think for themselves, you know, what are the differences, what are the similarities?
Well, thank you very much, especially your point that you read the Quran yourself. So this is the way to read the Holy Quran. And instead of reading some quotations that people have taken out of context, read the whole book. It's not that difficult. And there are good translations available. You can get that. And also, Muslims, Christians, Jews, wherever they live, they should establish this dialogue committee. The interfaith programs are going on now all over the country. And it is important that people should get involved into this. So we should have dialogue on the local level as well as on the national level. And there are some good programs of dialogue going on with the Catholic community, with the Christian community, with the Jewish community. I'm very much involved on the national level as well as on the level here in California. These are very important. Even on the international level, we should do that. There is a need that all religious people, because we are living in a society that is becoming everywhere pluralistic society. Everywhere people of all faith and all cultures are living together. It is important that people understand each other and do not misrepresent. Muslims should not misrepresent Jews and Christians. Christians should not do that with Muslims and Jews. And Jews should not do that to Christians and Muslims. We all have to work. Unless we understand each other, we cannot make this world a peaceful world. So dialogue is the way. I have a professor here at Claremont. He wrote a nice book called The Death or Dialogue. That is, either you do dialogue, otherwise there will be violence, there will be difficulties. So this world requires dialogue, understanding of each other.
We're going to have to stop, and we've come to the end of our time, and my apologies, we have some callers we can't take, but we'll simply have to leave it there for right now, with our thanks to our guest, Dr. Musama Siddiqui. He is the religious director of the Islamic Society of Orange County, California. He's been serving there since 1981. He also is past president of the Islamic Society of North America. Dr. Siddiqui, thank you very much for talking with us today.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Our program, Focus 580, is made possible in part with support from the Art Mart in the Lincoln Square Mall, Urbana. The Art Mart is pleased to support public radio in East Central Illinois. The broadcast also made possible by a grant from The Great Impasta, a restaurant serving foods from northern Italy. The Great Impasta is at 114 West Church in Champaign, and the staff there at The Great Impasta encourage you to join them in supporting AM 580. We're going to take a break. When we continue with Focus, a different subject, we'll talk about the growing mental health problem on college campuses across the country, with Richard Cattison. He's chief of the mental health service at Harvard. First, though, we'll break for news and update on the market. Stay tuned.
The Carl Center for Rural Health and Farm Safety is proud to underwrite agricultural programming on WILL.